Hi, I'm Leanne Setliff, and you're listening to PRN, Pause, Renew, Next, a podcast about soul care, scripture, and stories of faith. If you like the podcast, please subscribe and share it with your friends. Enjoy!
Welcome to PRN. Pause, Renew, Next, the podcast. I'm Jenny Detweiler. Today in this episode, we're going to be talking about a woman who lived 200 years ago, but her life and her story still have impacts on our lives today, and her name is Sojourner Truth. Now, I'll be honest, before researching her, I really did not know very much about her. I think her name is really famous, but I don't know how many Americans really know in depth anything about her life or her story. So I'm excited to talk about that today. Because she was so busy and did so many things in her life, it was really overwhelming for me to try to figure out what exactly I was going to narrow down to talk about in this podcast with only 20 or 25 minutes to speak. So I decided, since this podcast is about faith and faith stories, that really I would focus on that part of her life and kind of the impact that she had and what her faith did in her life. So we're going to start back at the very beginning. She was not born Sojourner Truth. She was born Isabella Bomfrey to parents James and Betsy. And she was born into slavery. Her family were all slaves on a farm in New York. Mr. Hardenberg was from Holland and he was their master. And he spoke Dutch. And so they also spoke Dutch. In fact, Isabella did not begin speaking English until she was over the age of 9. Her parents had somewhere between 10 and 12 children. It's unsure how many they had, but Isabella was the second to last of them. And she really doesn't have a lot of memories of her brothers and sisters because they were all sold away before she was very old at all. And this had a big impact on her family. Of course it would. And her mom often was sad, and Isabella always knew kind of what that was about. That really weighed hard on their family because you never knew when your children might be sold away or even when whole families might be dissolved. I think often when we think about slavery, we think about that being in the South only, but actually in the 1700s and early 1800s, slavery was prominent in the North as well. And most of Belle's story takes place in New York and in New England. And so she was born in a farm in New York as a slave. As Isabella grew, she grew up with a little brother named Peter, and her mom taught both of them to look into the sky and know that there was a God high above who was watching them and who cared about them. And she told them that if there was anything that they needed, that they should ask him because he was the only one that could care and provide for them no matter what. So if they were in trouble, they should ask him for help. And she really taught them that from a very young age. When Belle was sold at the age of 9 to another family called the Neelys, they spoke English, and she often was misunderstood because she only spoke Dutch. She didn't understand what she was being asked to do and would often get into trouble. In fact, one time she was beaten so badly that she bore scars of that for the rest of her life. As she grew, Belle continued her own relationship with the Lord. She believed, though, that he could only hear her if she spoke out loud. She didn't know that he could hear her thoughts. Because she couldn't go around doing all of her duties and talking to the Lord, she found a quiet place by a stream that was covered by willows, and sometimes she would weave the little willows together to make kind of a little alcove for herself, and she would pray to the Lord there. She felt like the rushing water next to her could cover up her words. She would talk to him out loud like a friend, and she would ask him for help like her mother taught her. When times were good, she would go there and pray less. When times were bad, she would go to her spot and pray multiple times a day. She would ask God to deliver her from her troubles and her pain and suffering, and then she would promise to be good. She found that, though, that she could not make good on her promise. I mean, she tried to be good, but just like all the rest of us, it's really hard to do that. And she'd often find herself sinning again. But she just knew that if God would put her in a good home where there were fewer triggers for her to be upset or to be bad, then she would be able to be good. She was passed through a couple of masters and ended up spending the longest time with the Dumont family. She longed so much to please and get approval by her master that she would work long, hard hours. There were even times when she would forego sleep to get her work done and win approval. As she grew, there was a man from a different farm who was also a slave named Robert, and they kind of fell in love, and Robert would sneak over to see her. At that time, a lot of slave owners would not want their slaves to date amongst other slaves in different farms, and the reason for that was because if there was a baby that came about, then one of those slave owners would not have access to that child. And so Robert's master did not want him to marry outside of his own farm. So he would sneak over to see Isabella. And one time he snuck over and was caught by his master and was beaten literally half to death. And he never returned. And he ended up marrying somebody on his own plantation. And so soon after that, Mr. Dumont suggested that Isabella also get married. And he provided someone from his own plantation for her to marry, and his name was Thomas. And they were married around 1817. Now, slaves were often not married in the eyes of the law because their families could easily be dissolved at any time, which was really unfortunate and super unjust. I mean, I think us today are looking back and just amazed at how awful that is, but that was the case at that time. But Belle asked her master to be married by a preacher, and he agreed, so they were able to be married by a preacher. They had 5 children together over the next 10 years. In 1817, a new law was passed in New York that said that all slaves born before 1799 had to be set free by July 4th, 1827. This law included both Belle and her husband, Thomas, who had been born before 1799. It did not, however, include their children, so they would still have to be slaves to Mr. Dumont. Her master, Mr. Dumont, promised that he would free Tom and Belle in 1826, a year earlier than the law called for, and he said that they could live on his farm. Belle worked so hard that year, longer hours than usual, so looking forward to her freedom. Sometime during that year, she injured her hand, and that impeded her progress, but she worked as hard as she possibly could to make up for it. At the end of that year, Dumont told her that she hadn't done enough work due to her hand being injured and broke his deal. But she purposed in her heart that she would be free, and so she decided that once she'd finished spinning his wool that season, she would leave. She prayed to God about it, about how she would do it and when she would leave, because she so hated walking in the dark and she just really didn't want to do that. But she also didn't want to leave in the daytime because there would be no cover. It would be obvious what she was doing. So she figured out that she would leave at dawn. She felt like the thought must have come from God, so that's what she did. And she took her infant daughter, Sophia, and left early in the morning. Her husband did not want to leave, and so he stayed behind. Belle did not go far. She stopped at the home of the Van Wageners in town. They took her in and supported her decision to leave. It seems confusing that she would do that, and I'm honestly not sure why she didn't run farther all the way, but here are some of the reasons that I read about. She really had respect for her master, and she didn't want him to have to go looking for her too far. She'd seen him have to go look for other slaves before. I also think, you know, her family was still on the farm. She really didn't want to go too far. She wanted to be able to still see them. Later that day, Dumont came and commanded that she come home. And she said, "No, you told me that you would set me free and you didn't keep your end of the deal, but I'm keeping my end of the deal." And so I left. She stood her ground and politely but firmly said no. He said he would take the child, but again, she said firmly that he would not. The Van Wageners stepped in and offered to pay $20 for Belle and another $5 for her daughter. And so Dumont left. She ended up working for the Van Wageners, but they did not own her. She was free. Soon after she left, she found out that her 5-year-old son Peter had been sold, and he had ended up being taken to Alabama. She was heartbroken and furious for obvious reasons, but at that time it was illegal to sell a slave out of the state of New York, and so it was also against the law. She went to her Quaker friends and asked for help. They helped her find a lawyer, and she filed a complaint against the man who had taken him out of the state. The sale was against the law, so the court sided with her, but they said it was going to take many months to finish and close out the case. She said that she just knew that God would help her see her son again. "I felt so tall within. I felt as if the power of a nation was with me, she said. After it took so long, she began to feel that people were getting weary of her bothering them about getting her son back, but she couldn't give up. She wondered if God was getting weary too, but she kept on praying. She felt that since Jesus was an intercessor, that maybe he would plead for her to God, and God would listen to him. And so she prayed to Jesus to show her someone who could help her. Soon after that, a person found her on the street and asked her about her son. And when she told him the story, they pointed her to another lawyer's office. She went in, and that lawyer heard her case and said if she would give him $5, then he would have her son back in 24 hours. She got money from her Quaker friends to pay him, and the man was as good as his word. She saw her son 24 hours later. And the court appointed that she would be his guardian from now on since his sale had been illegal. He was free. Life with the Van Wageners was much better than her former life. But you know, it's really hard to move on in life and do something new. We often find ourselves wanting to go back to the old ways. And that happened to her as well. Watching her friends and families from a distance was hard. There were some holidays that slaves were able to celebrate together, and as one of these holidays approached, she had a desire to go back to her old life. She called it going back to Egypt, which I think is a fitting way to describe it since Egypt is where the Israelites were enslaved in the Old Testament, and often the Bible talks about them wanting to go back to Egypt every time things would get hard. One day, Mr. Dumont came by to visit, and Belle told him that she would get her things and her baby Sophia, and come get into his carriage to go back to his farm. But just as she was about to go with him and get in the carriage, she had a vision. Now, I'm really not going to do this vision justice. She writes about it so eloquently in her book. So keep that in mind, but I hope you get a general feeling of what this was that she describes. She says, all of a sudden, she felt God all around her, and felt that there was no place that she could hide from him because he was everywhere. All of her unfulfilled promises and sins rose before her, and she felt shrunk back before him. She felt like she was not adequate, that she was not worthy, that she was not holy, and almost like an out-of-body experience is what it sounds like. When she came back to reality, she found that Dumont had already gone. She tried to go back and do her normal chores, but she felt changed inside and really distracted. She couldn't talk to him the way she had before because she felt unworthy to approach God in the ways that she had talked to him previously. And she found herself wishing that there was someone who could talk to him for her, someone who was worthy. Soon she began to feel the presence of a friend who, she says, appeared to stand between herself and an insulted deity. Like, and this is her quote, an umbrella had been interposed between her scorching head and a burning sun. She kept wondering who was this person, because she felt a presence and he felt like a friend, but she wasn't sure who it was. Finally, an answer came. It is Jesus. She says that she had previously heard of Jesus, but really considered him more of an important man, like George Washington. But now she realized who he really was and how much he loved her. He was there to stand between she and God. And she really just fell in love with him and thought about him and talked about him. She says that she felt kind of jealous over him for a period of time, that she had a special relationship with Jesus, and she found herself surprised when other people talked about him. She didn't want other people to love him because she thought that she would be thrust aside. She says she thought, what? I thought no one knew Jesus but me. So that's really kind of the beginning of where her faith like takes off, and she just feels his presence. And that really goes with her through the rest of her life. So I think that that was sort of an important turning point in her life. Her husband was set free at the appointed time that Dumont had told them, but his health was not good, and he ended up dying within the year. Isabella never got remarried. She remained single the rest of her life. In 1829, she moved to New York City. She became involved at a church called Zion Church. And while she was there, she did some teaching and preaching and singing, and she really liked to teach the poor. But she thought that they could use a lot more than teachings and songs. She felt like they needed real help, like shelter, food, and clothes. And so she began to help out at a women's homeless shelter. She also began leading singing and prayers at the church. And this was really a foreshadow of what she would be famous for in her life. She had a really strong presence. She was very, very tall and held herself with a certain presence, I think, and charisma. And people grew in their faith by watching hers. While she was in New York City, Peter lived with her there. But soon he started having problems. She was really growing in her faith and expanding and doing good things. And he was really not. He had a lot of behavioral issues and a lot of problems. And so she advocated that he become a sailor because she felt like that discipline would be good for him. So that's what he did. And they corresponded for a short period of time. And then she never heard from him again. I don't know if she ever even knew what happened to him. But that was the end of her relationship with him. One day she felt the Lord speak to her to go east. She didn't know exactly what this meant, but she was willing to follow God's leading and obey. She quit her job, and on June 1st, 1843, she headed east to Connecticut. She stopped at the home of a Quaker who asked her what her name was. She told her that day that God gave her the name Sojourner because she was traveling around telling people about him. And she prayed that the Lord would give her a last name because everyone else had two names, and she had only ever had the last name of one of her masters. She felt like the Lord gave her the last name Truth because she was to declare God's word to the people, and that was the truth. From that time on, her name was Sojourner Truth, no longer Isabella. She was 46 years old. So I just want to stop right here and say, I think that is phenomenal. That really her life takes off at 46 years old, and she's famous for what she did in the second half of her life more than the first half. I think often we think that youth is where it's at, and if you don't get it done, then you're going to be a nobody. But you know what? God can use you at any age. So really, like, her life from here on is where the impact starts to take place. She preached and she traveled. She also worked towards the abolition of slavery as well as women's rights. In her life, she actually knew Susan B. Anthony and a lot of other famous people and kind of worked alongside them. She met a woman named Olive Gilbert who wrote an autobiography about her life called The Narrative of Sojourner Truth, a Northern Slave. Frederick Douglass was famous for his biography at this time, and she felt like telling her story could help in the anti-slavery movement. It was published in 1850. Her book did not become a bestseller right away. People really didn't know about her like they did about Frederick Douglass. But she would go around to abolitionist meetings and try to sell her books there. Finally, she was asked to speak at a meeting, and people were greatly moved by her story. Then they began to buy her books. She gave one of her most famous speeches in 1851 at a women's convention, and the speech was later named Ain't I a Woman? She began to rocket to fame after this speech. She traveled through Ohio and Indiana giving speeches and selling books. She didn't worry about her needs being provided for while she was on the road, because her faith was so strong that the Lord would provide for her. Her whole life she faced adversity, but she never let it dissuade her from doing what she knew she must. She was often harassed and threatened, and I want to give you a couple examples of this that I think are really good characterizations of who she is. At one time, she was threatened that the building she was scheduled to speak in would be burned, and she told them, "Well, then I'll just preach to the ashes." Another time, some pro-slavery men claimed that she was actually a man in disguise. Remember, she was very tall and very authoritative. Instead of going to a separate room to be disrobed in the presence of women, as it was suggested she do, she stood at the front of the room and bared her chest from the stage in front of everyone and said that it was in vindication of her truthfulness. Instead of bearing the shame that they wanted her to bear, she made them feel shame, as this was reminiscent of slaves on an auction block standing naked before being bought and sold. This move even further increased her fame. So I think that gives you a good indication of who she is. She doesn't take any junk, and she carried herself really well, I think. At the outbreak of the Civil War, Sojourner Truth worked hard to encourage black men to enlist in the Northern Army. She was so proud that one of her grandsons fought for the Union. But as slavery was abolished in 1863, thousands of slaves fled the South looking for a new life and ended up in Washington, D.C. Sojourner wanted to help them because they had no jobs or homes. What would become of them? She found that they did not know how to provide for themselves because they really had never had to do so before. She began to try to equip them with the things that she knew because she had lived as a free woman for many years. This is really cool, y'all. She was commended by President Lincoln for her work. When she met him, she told him that she had never heard of him before he ran for president. He smiled and said that he had heard of her long before that. She carried around a book, kind of like a scrapbook that she would call her book of life, and she had him sign it. After he had been assassinated and his body was laid in the East Room of the White House, Sojourner and her grandson Sammy were some of the people that came to pay their respects. After the war, she had ideas for how to help all of the newly freed slaves. One of her ideas was called 20 Acres and a Mule. She felt that if the government could pay back the slaves for their unpaid work and give them land out west, that they could be productive as farmers and would not need help from others. One senator lent his support to her idea, but before it gained traction, he died. She could never gain enough support to further that cause. Until her death in 1883, Sojourner Truth fought on. She worked for many, many, many causes, including the abolition of slavery, prison reform, women's rights, property rights, and universal suffrage. Sadly, abolition was one of the only things that she actually saw accomplished in her lifetime. It is reported that her last words recorded by a newspaper reporter 2 days before she died were, "Be a follower of the Lord Jesus." Okay, so in hearing her story and reading about her, I have a few takeaways that kind of stood out to me. I was really amazed and inspired by her strength in adversity. I think some of the most important people that impact the world greatly have faced a lot of adversity, and certainly she was one of those people. But her resiliency and her ability to find meaning in it and push forward anyway, I thought was really inspiring. I was also inspired by her strong faith. She wasn't dissuaded when things came against her. She just kept on anyway and really just felt like God was going to provide. And I just love that. I loved her call to social justice. She didn't just talk the talk, but she put her life's work into seeing change. In fact, she didn't just want women's votes. She showed up and tried to vote and got kicked out. So she would always do the things that she was telling people that they should be doing. And the quote that really stuck with me is her quote when she went to go get her son about feeling so tall within that she felt like the power of a nation was with her. I mean, I can just see her carrying herself tall and upright and strong, like in opposition to what was unjust around her. What stands out to you about her story? I'd love to hear about it. Feel free to comment on the Pause Renew Next page or on PRN's Facebook page to join in the conversation. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and pass it on to others that you think would enjoy it as well. New podcasts are released each Tuesday, and keep an eye out for new blog posts on the website. You can find PRN on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, and you can find the podcast on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else that podcasts can be found. This is Jenny Detweiler with PRN, Pause, Renew, Next, the podcast. May you be encouraged on your journey with Jesus.